Good evening, James McKenney here with my Science Hour, the last day of the year, December 31st, 2020. Wow. Let's see. A few hours to go. Will we make it to midnight? This year has been, I don't know, unlike any other, and let us not repeat this one. I'll tell you something. Everybody's walking around like the virus and the election and all of this is being controlled by a very few people who are just ripping this world apart. They love destruction. They love calamity. They make their business chaos. Remember that old television show? It was Smart or Mr. Smart or whatever it was. And he was this agent. It was a comedy show, but they had an agency that was out there called Chaos. And of course, Maxwell Smart's job was to overcome the, you know, and he would bumble his way through things and always succeed. But anyway, it was a comedy show. But literally, in the world we live in today, everything that you see going around, all of the calamity, things being blown up, this is all controlled. Insanity, chaos. Okay, and it's as it turns out, the explosion in Nashville turns out that gee, it just happened to be where all of the machines were, the what are they called, Dominion voting machines, where they were doing an analysis. It just happened to be that building, and the FBI was Johnny on the spot that morning. They were actually there, from what I understand, before the bombing. And managed then to spirit out all of the voting machines. Isn't that special? And when you look at the news, it's like, oh, this some crazy guy, white supremacist, on and on. It just, you know, the news media is there to take over the story. All of this is controlled insanity. Controlled insanity. So anyway, I'm not going to go on about that, but it's just that the year in review. When you see everything that happened, just understand this was all part of a plan, all part of a very large plan that was rolled out. And you can see the webpage. I've seen the webpage in extreme detail, going down level after level after level, the outlines and all the interconnections and all the social and economic and all of the implications. We're all planned out, and this is what will happen, and this is how the people will react, and on and on and on. This is all part of a very big orchestrated plan. Okay, and just a quick note, this morning, early morning today, I was a guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie talking about energy and a little bit of a Planet X update. So check that out. If you missed the live show, go back and listen. It was the second half of this morning's show. The first half was another guest. And so the second 2 hours, I was the guest talking about energy. Very important. So tonight I'm going to talk about energy, food, water, land, resources, stupid, bad habits. And where do we go from here? There are some actual benefits that happened. Some people's lives are going to change dramatically, but in a good sense, because they are flooding out of the cities. Now, the whole goal of all of this chaos was to drive people into the cities, that they wouldn't be able to live in the hinterlands. And kind of like Canada, all of the people live in the metropolitan areas. There are very few of them. You can pull up maps and see the density, the population density maps of Canada. And there's a couple central cities, you know, Alberta, Saskatchewan have a couple minor cities. And then Ontario has a couple minor cities. And then, of course, the big cities. The population of Canada is mainly built along the northern part of the Great Lakes, where they do business with the United States, or I should say where they used to do business with the United States. There really isn't a lot going on anymore in Canada relative to the U.S. The borders are closed. Anyway, you know, to talk about insanity, that's a place to go if you want a real crazy existence, with the trap being lowered on, you know, based on the COVID thing, I would call it the COVID thing. Okay, so anyway, a few scientific topics first. And then also I'm going to be talking about a paper that is called Silent Weapons. And it's very important. It's a paper that was written back in the 1950s and was kind of the prelude to the UN Agenda 2020 and the UN Agenda 2030. So these people were writing agenda papers, way back in the 50s and before, and this was outlining how they would basically attack the U.S. public and dumb them down on purpose, because they're smart, you're dumb, they're big, you're small, they're good, you're bad. And that's, so I'll be going into that. At any rate, that's the topic that is apropos for right now, because they're implementing everything that was in that document. And I'll cap this by saying that parents, and grandparents, get your kids out of public schools. If you're going to have your kids in any kind of school at all, make it a private Christian school. That's a good start. But you have to be careful with any private school, because they are filled with craziness. And the people in education, etc., it's just kind of gone insane. So you have to be really careful, and you have to be careful of the schools taking your kids over, taking over their minds with the liberal propaganda. And anyway, I'm not going to go into that tonight. That's why I have my education program that is designed, it's basically science, but when you look at this silent weapons paper that was created in the 1950s, the one thing that they say specifically to destroy the science and mathematics and logic education of children, so they can't reason. That's what the new math is all about. These parents, they go, gee, I don't know how to do this new math thing with my kids. Well, neither do the kids. And the whole purpose is to destroy the logic of mathematics so that the kids grow up unable to reason. That's the whole purpose of that. The No Child Left Behind, the Common Core Education, name it what you will, the new name de jure of the modern educational thought process. Education today is designed to standardize and dumb down the kids. And remember, you know, the teachers' unions have been instrumental in this also, where in a protection mode for the teachers, they don't allow the teachers to teach anything that's not in the syllabus. And too many times the syllabus is created by the school or somebody else, not by the teacher. So the teacher walks into a classroom and goes, hello, class, today we're going to learn about ABC. And that ABC was defined by somebody else. And it does not include, well, let's talk about Roman letters, or let's talk about Russian letters. Ooh, if you did that, then you would be fired because you were teaching outside the syllabus. And that's just a simple example. Okay, so anyway, I'll be talking about that. And of course, that weaponizes Google and the online education, Wikipedia, Rational Wiki, fake science news, and the list goes on. But here's the thing, too, and I want to come back to parents, grandparents, because sometimes the grandparents see this going on, and their kids, who are the parents, don't see what's going on, and they're being led around like a bull with a ring in the nose to do all of this stuff. And by the time, here's what happens, and I've seen it a million times. The kids get 18 years old, and the parents go, oh, what happened? What happened to my kids? Who are they? I don't even know these kids. They have, you know, where did they get all this, these crazy ideas? They think by putting them into that school that somehow they're going to get an education, and they're going to be rubber stamped and have, be able to go on to higher education, etc. And nothing could be farther from the truth. And this whole 18 years, the parents have been thinking, they've been off busy working two jobs, trying to make a living. And now with COVID, they've been running around. And now you got home education, trying to keep the kids online so they get their scores done and get their work done. And the parents have no clue that this is a giant, it's like a giant mental molding machine that takes your kids' brains and turns them into somebody that you may not really want to know. I'm not kidding you. And so parents have to wake up, take off the blinders, as my Uncle Ben used to say. Open up your big brown eyes and see what's going on around you in the world today. And, sarcastically say that to the kids, because, the kids are growing up kind of like in a bubble land. Okay, let me do a few quick announcements here, scientific topics. There was a Hubble telescope observation. This was in the Bornax constellation in the southern skies, and they saw what is known as gravitational lensing. It is called that. It's really not gravitational lensing, because no place in history of science has anybody ever verified general relativity. It has never been done. There is, it looks very convincing, and there is a galaxy that is distant, the light from that galaxy is being bent around this other galaxy. And they claim that this is due to gravitational field affecting the light. Well, that's where the problem is, because nobody has ever verified general relativity or the belief that its gravity somehow affects light and bends it. And I can tell you for a fact that it does not. So what's going on? This is caused by what is, in my work, it's called the induced electric dipole redshift. And it's due to the fact that the fusion galaxy has a fusion process just like our sun in the atmosphere of the core of the galaxy. And that causes a differential electric field, because it's explained in my books. I'm not going to re-explain that here. You have to read my books to understand that. But anyway, that's the effect that's causing this lensing. And I have to resolve you and myself to the following, that never, ever in the future of science or in scientific endeavors or in scientific publications or news or scientific news, you're never, ever going to see a change in the dogma that's being expressed today. The dogma is going to stay the same. So in 10 years, in 20 and 30 years, the news media is still going to be driving the same train. Remember, all of this was defined by Carl Sagan in the late 1970s, literally, because they sat down and literally historically what happened is Emanuel Velikovsky was selling his books by the millions internationally, The Worlds in Collision, etc. And the news media came to the scientific community, which was rather disorganized. They had their universities, they had their respectable publications, and they were kind of bumbling along, I guess would be the best word, with their scientific concepts, etc. And that was before the space program. That was before before unmanned space probes went out and really began to probe the solar system, etc. And so they had their theories, etc., and that was fine amongst themselves because they just peer-reviewed their own work, and it was like a little clubhouse, and everything was fine. But then the news media came to them, and it was actually an honest question. It said, well, okay, Velikovsky says this. You're outraged. You're mad about this. What is your story? Tell us. And you know what? They didn't have one. They did not have an organized story. And this goes all the way back to 1950, when Velikovsky first published his books. That's where the Dirty Snowball Comet model came from. It was back then, it was called the Ice Ball Comet model. And Fred Whipple was a young, I don't know if he was a student at the time, but he was almost a student. You know, he was possibly just got his PhD. That gives you a feeling for how long ago this was. In the, you know, 1950 is when Velikovsky published The Worlds in Collision, the first of his big bombshell books. But anyway, the response of the standard academic and scientific community was that they did not have a story. So Carl Sagan was the guy who took it upon himself to mount the charge against Velikovsky and got together all of the respected heads of their respective fields, like geology, evolutionary biology, Stephen Jay Gould, and all of these people. And they got together and they had the 1976, I believe it was, or was it 74, American Association for the Advancement of Science meeting. And they somewhat put together this structure of science with all of the beliefs, etc. And then, like, I showed up in 1979 at Cornell and really didn't understand a lot of what was going on, the politics, the international politics, etc., and stepped into a beehive because they had believed that they had just cured this. And it was a, you know, it would infiltrated everything that happened at the university level, and especially Cornell, because that's where Carl Sagan was. He was the David Duncan Chair of Astronomy at Cornell. So in 1979, just as I was walking into Cornell as a faculty member, Carl Sagan was being spirited away to Los Angeles to do the Cosmos series. So in the Cosmos series, Andruyan, who was his secretary at the time, later they got married, that was Carl's second wife, but Andruyan put together this material into an organized format, and that was the basis of the original Cosmos series and the original Cosmos book. And then later it was redone by Neil deGrasse Tyson, what about, I don't know, within the last 10 years, I think it was 2014 when deGrasse Tyson did the follow-up and basically had all the same talking points. And by the way, in my paid cast series, I have a 20-some show series dealing, picking apart the whole Cosmos series, the Cosmos book, both the Carl Sagan Cosmos series and the Neil deGrasse Tyson, which was the basically a regurgitation of what Sagan did. But see, what they did, the reason I have to really stress this, and this is a good time to do it, as we're talking about education, they defined what everybody should learn about science. And the thing is, they made Carl Sagan into some almost like a godlike figure, that, you know, smartest man in the world, all of this. And in reality, the people that really knew him and what he did, he had like 300 publications in respectable journals. But from what my inside information at Cornell was, is he published a lot of work from his graduate students. And he just take it and publish it under his name. And that was his like right to do this. So anyway, in the real world of science, in the tier one world of science, which is controlled by the World Bank, and it was back then, and it still is now, they realized, and this goes back, by the way, to the Silent Weapons paper that was published in the 1950s, was to present science to the public that made no sense at all, that just simply was not true. And so a long time ago, decades ago, I started defining, you know, because I started defining what I call tier one, tier two, tier three level science. Tier one science is the I call it military science because it's highly secretive. The military has a need to know what's real. They have to know what the heck is really going on in outer space. And I know because I've talked to these people and they know what I do. And they've learned a lot from me and my work And that's their job to have a realistic view of what the heck is going on in outer space, in the world, and weather, etc. But the Tier 2 science, the Carl Sagans, the people you see at NASA, you know, the people that publish from universities and highly respected journals that get a mouthpiece if there's some kind of announcement to be made, these people are Tier 2 scientists, and they're not top-level scientists. And I've seen this over and over again. An example I give is right in your face. I was at an American Geophysical Union meeting, which is a completely Tier 2 science. And that's why I stopped going to them. And besides, like, you go to these meetings, and these people are just preaching to their choirs. They have their little groups. They have their little set of publications they publish in. They might be NASA scientists. They might be at JPL. They might be at Goddard. They might be at Los Alamos or some other worldwide, you know, some other country, European Space Agency, you know, CERN. They're from all of these agencies. But these are Tier 2 scientists, and they don't know it. But anyway, there was a guy up giving a talk on solar wind, and he had some modeling that they were doing, trying to model the solar wind. And he got done with his talk, and there was the question and answer period, and somebody raised their hand, and they said, hey, because during the talk, he said they are required under their grant proposal, the money they get from the federal government, they are required to write up a report of their work and send it up to basically the Tier 1 science level. And they have a place where they send it. And one of the guys raised his hand. He says, well, what did they say about your work? Did they like it? Did they not like it? Did they agree with it? He said, the guy giving the talk goes, they never respond to us. We don't know. We don't know if they liked it or didn't like it or use it or not use it. We don't know anything. They never respond. They never respond to us. That tells you right there in a nutshell that these people, if they had a brain, would understand that they are Tier 2 science. And also, there's a tremendous political pressure for them to keep saying the same thing over and over again. That's why you see in the textbooks or in a newspaper article or online article about something, they'll say something like, oh, this icy little wanderer, you know, about the snowball comets that they believe the comets are snowballs. And, you know, they've landed on the nucleus of a comet. There's no ice. There's no snow. The head of the European Space Agency program said it. But I have people who've talked directly to the head of the European Space Agency and said, hey, look, McCanny is right about this. Why don't you open up the door? And it's like silence. They know. They know that they are Tier 2 science, and their job, to keep getting their paycheck, they have to keep promoting this bogus science. And so that's what you're getting in, whether you're at a university or you're in a school, public school, or even private school. They all use the same information flow, this accredited thing. And that's why I say very proudly that my education program is not accredited, and I don't want to submit it towards accreditation. Why? Because accreditation means it has to go to NASA for approval. It has to get rubber stamped from the Tier 2 scientists, and they're a bunch of idiots. And so anyway, back to this gravitational lensing topic, my point is that you are going to hear about gravitational lensing for the next 40 years and beyond. Nothing is going to change because, as in the Middle Ages, when they taught the Catholic Church, who was the educator in those days, taught the masses that actually got an education. Most people in the Middle Ages did not get an education. They put them out on the street and they did whatever they could do to scrape out a living. And that's where they want us to go back to, is where people are simply not educated and you have a little job, a little task that you do. You're meant to do that. And, you know, then they want to bring in AI, artificial intelligence, so that some machine can do your job, and then they don't have to pay you a pension. Then they can eliminate you with the next COVID-20 or COVID-21 shot that they're going to give people. Okay, so at any rate, it's important for parents to understand that education is designed to destroy your kids. That's why all the liberal, teaching little kids, little boys that they're girls, and little girls that they're boys, is so important, because it's just one more method of confusing kids, just another way. Okay, so I'll be talking a little bit more, and I'll be reading from that Silent Weapons paper. Okay, and then just another quip here. France Aryan Space is called, that's a kind of an interesting name for a French. Aryan refers to the Hitler's super race, remember, the Aryan race? And so anyway, the Aryan Space is the French Space Agency under the European Space Agency, but the French division of that is called Aryan Space, A-R-I-A-N Space. And they launched a spy satellite, CS-02, it's called, or CS-02, I guess, something like that. And anyway, interestingly enough, they launched it on a Russian Soyuz space rocket. And you could tell that Soyuz has a very specific shape. You can tell the Russian rockets because of the way they built them. Very good, very reliable. And that spy satellite is now in outer space. And you have to wonder, a country like France that is, economically, and militarily, you would never consider France some kind of world power in either science or in military, or in what you would call intelligence gathering or information gathering. You would never consider the French somehow in the top 10. So it makes you wonder, who exactly are the French spying on? Is it Russia? Is it the United States? Is it England? Is it, Spain? I mean, it doesn't make much sense. It's just one of those things that kind of sticks out. And just another quip here. The last number of weeks, and especially the last week, there's a space-related webpage that's supposedly the epitome of all space information called space.com. And they do a lot more promoting of the latest sci-fi movie, Hollywood movie about space, than they do about real space. But recently they've been discussing aliens, like what you should know about aliens or what, kind of like Gee Whiz articles about aliens. And I thought, well, that's curious for agencies that, up to at least recently denied that there was anything such as aliens. So anyway, that's another kind of curiosity. And there again, I think what's going to go on here, and I brought this up on previous shows, is that somewhere they're trying to eke out some kind of story, like the government knows about aliens, or the Pope. The Pope a few years ago went to New York City, and he was supposed to make an announcement about the Vatican's contact with aliens. And he never did. He never did, and that's a story in itself, but they're trying to find a way to leak something out. And this is, I will say this about space.com. What they're trying to do is draw in more readership. And they're trying to draw in the Trekkie geeks, is what I guess I would call them. The Trekkies. A Trekkie is a guy that follows, or woman, man, woman, whatever, that follows space, that follows Star Trek, the movie, the series, etc., and, goes where no man has gone before. But anyway, there's people who dress up like Dr. Spock or Captain Kirk, and they have meetings, and they discuss the different shows, and what happened with the Klingons. And that's a Trekkie. And so there are Trekkies relative to NASA and relative to other things going on. So it's kind of a term that it's a descriptive term. And so you can kind of generalize it. There might be people who like to follow, say, general relativity or other topics, in the space world. They have their own little thing. So they're kind of Trekkies. Groupies would be in the music industry or in the Hollywood scenes. Groupies are people that follow actors or singers, etc. But it looks like space.com is looking for readership, and it's looking to the people that are waiting, kind of like for the government or some official group to make an announcement about aliens. And as I said before, don't ever expect them to come out and like lay everything out on the table and go, here's everything we know, here's all of the contacts, we've been contacting this aliens from, you know, some star system, or, you know, don't ever, if that's going on, even if it is going on, they're not going to tell you, and anything they put out is going to be completely fake, altered, homogenized, blended, and, you know, pasteurized for your consumption. It's not going to be anything real, and they're going to feed it out into little bits, little pieces to keep those people attached to their television set or their computer screen, hoping for the next smidgen of information. And it, believe me, it ain't going to happen. It's just, it's like clickbait. Clickbait is something on the internet where you click on it and you're drawn off to a web page, and half the time it doesn't say anything about what you thought it should say. But anyway, it looks like space.com is looking for listenership, readership online by mentioning the Trekkies and stuff. And it's also symbolic of their mentioning a lot of movies, space-related movies, which there seem to be quite a few lately. Okay, so energy, food, water, land, resources, stupid, bad habits. Let me just start out with nuclear power. Just a quick mention that if you look at the worldwide usage of nuclear power, it's only about 4%. You know, in worldwide, a lot of countries are burning fuel oil, diesel fuel, to create electricity. If you go to islands, if you go to poor countries, it's coal, and it's, in a lot of places, cannot import coal because it's difficult to manage. A liquid is much easier to manage because it can go in a tube. You can build a tube, and the tube, the liquid flows. Coal, it has to be transported, like in a truck, and then dumped off, and it's, you got to scoop it up, etc., and special containers, things like that. So liquids are much easier to handle. And so it turns out that a good portion of the world is using petroleum products. And, of course, they're using natural gas now more and more. But in a lot of the poorer places in the world, they don't have enough money to build new resources to create electricity. So they're kind of stuck with this, you know, diesel fuel, number two fuel oil, it's called, for creating energy. And so the one thing that I've dedicated my work to is replacing nuclear, coal, and natural gas, the big three sources of energy that are being used worldwide in transportation and in generation of electricity. But the fact is there are countries like France that depends heavily on nuclear. And Germany completely shut down its fleet of nuclear power plants. It just said no more nuclear, and that was it, which was a very good decision. And that is what should happen in the United States. We have approximately 100. There were a couple of years ago, there were 104. Now there's down to about 98 nuclear power plants left. They are just white elephants for the power companies, and it's one of the reasons they're all going bankrupt. They're also heavily invested in three-blade wind turbines and solar, some of them in solar, primarily three-blade wind turbines that do not produce, that it's a big kind of monetary black hole where they put money and it's not giving them a return. And they shift the money around in bookkeeping to make it look like it's some other expense. But those two factors are going to devastate the central power companies in coming years. So the wing generator is set and poised in a position now to be ready when all of this economic failure goes on. And there's nothing that anybody can do about it. The die has already been cast. The economic structuring has already been done. they can't reverse all the expenses and all the bad investments they've made. So anyway, we should absolutely be shutting down the U.S. nuclear fleet. And it's in the United States, it produces about 11% of the energy that we use, and primarily in the form of electricity. But that can easily be replaced by just turning off a light bulb. We have all kinds of programs where we conserve, or they say, you know, don't drive, you know, faster than a certain speed because it costs more in fuel. The faster you go, the more the wind resistance, and to cover that same mile distance, it costs more fuel the faster you go because of wind resistance. And so there are many things that people do to conserve. One of them, just turning a light bulb off, or computers, people let them run when they're not using them, or the television running and nobody's in the room. All kinds of things we could do to take off that nuclear power plant 11%. So that's something, you know, and now you have people out there running around saying that nuclear power is green because it doesn't give off, it does not give off carbon dioxide, which is absolutely absurd. Nuclear is the most non-green energy source on the planet. With the nuclear fuel, the nuclear fuel preparation is one issue that's environmentally toxic. And number two is after it's burned, and then, of course, just the heat pollution during the process of burning, you have a Carnot cycle. 80% of that energy goes right up into the atmosphere right now. But the waste is horrific, the nuclear waste. And then you tie it in with the very corrupt nuclear energy industry worldwide. And, I mean, nuclear is just something that has to go the way of the dinosaur. That's all there is to it. Okay. The other forms of energy. The trend now is to get away from coal. The trend is to go towards natural gas, which is a good trend because natural gas is very clean. It's very inexpensive now. It's very plentiful because of fracking. But fracking has its own problem also. So what I've done is made a prediction that within a year or two, natural gas the prices will rise again. Because what they're doing is they're selling off tremendous amounts of natural gas at a very low price and not planning on the future. It's like you go on a survival trip and you've got a lot of stored food. In the first couple of weeks, you eat like royal kings and queens, only to run out after a few weeks, and then you have no food left because you were overeating for the first couple of weeks. It's kind of the same thing, and nobody's really planning this. Although natural gas, they say there's deposits that have been discovered, like in the Appalachian Mountains is one source where they say there's like an infinite source of energy. That doesn't mean that we have to use it, but here's the plan for the wing generator, and I hope that within this coming decade it will come to fruition. We're starting into, well, we're 2020, we're already into the next decade, but 2021 is the year that I hope the wing generator gets up to that commercial level where we start seeing a dent in Central Power Company energy production being produced from the wind. But the whole idea of natural gas is that it's a source of fuel for electricity that can be, the production of electricity can be varied, like you're driving, just like driving your car down the road. You put on the gas, the car accelerates, and in, you know, no time at all, you're going a different velocity down the road. The same is true with the natural gas-fired turbines that they're using. It's a two-stage with a heat exchanger for the heat that's generated, so they get another boost of energy. So they're fairly efficient. And so that is the power plant of the future. They're relatively inexpensive. You can put them in place. They're up in a day and running. After they're installed, it's not a long construction process to put them in place. So it's a very economical way to produce electricity, and it's actually taking over. This is interesting. With the falling prices of wind and solar, it's natural gas is actually less expensive to produce electricity than wind and solar. They were getting an edge for a little while. But the wind generator beats all of them. But then the other issue is that instead of burning natural gas, we can produce most of our energy from the wind and then cap it off with the natural gas. So that'll extend the natural gas lifetime 10 or 100-fold. So that's something that's very important to conserve that resource for future generations. Everything is like, well, we got to burn it right now. No, we don't. And then also conserve. But how are you going to conserve when all of the exchange of energy from petroleum-based transportation, diesel trucks, automobiles, gasoline automobiles, etc., has got to go to electricity. So the central power plants, and here's the crux of the entire issue. The central power plants are cash-strapped. They don't have money. And there's a good reason they don't, because they've squandered. They've been very poorly managed in terms of looking towards the future and maintaining the infrastructure. They say that the infrastructure in the United States for electricity is worse than China in the rural areas of China, if you can even imagine that. This is hard to believe, but this is the state in the United States. So the central power companies around the United States do not have the wherewithal to upgrade their infrastructure, to build additional facilities so they can produce more electricity for future demand, and certainly they don't have capacity to build more generation power capacity to provide electricity for automobiles. There's going to be an absolute surge in automobiles, electric automobiles, in the next 10 years. They say that a 10-year-old today will never drive a gasoline-powered automobile. Absolutely incredible. So the demand for electricity is probably going to double easily in the next 10 years because of public transportation and airplanes. Airplanes are becoming very efficient, but still, an airplane uses a lot of energy. They go faster, the air resistance, etc. So travel by airplane uses more energy than travel by land. It gets you there faster, but the issue is air transportation via electric power is on. It's here. It's already being implemented, and you're going to see a lot more of that in the next 10 years. So moving away from petroleum is good. Moving towards electricity is good, but having that electricity produced at the central power company with coal or natural gas or nuclear is bad. So we have to replace those sources of energy, and that's where the wind generator comes in, is because it can produce, and this is the plan, using distributed energy. The whole idea of distributed energy is that you have windy areas around the country and you put in large wind generators that can replace central power companies. You overbuild the wind energy part so that you can scale back. It's like an automobile. You don't drive it at full speed. If the speedometer says 140 miles an hour, you don't go around driving around at 140 miles an hour. You drive at half of that. And that's the way machinery is built. So then you overbuild the wind generation system so that you always have plenty of capacity. Then you top it off with the natural gas generators. And so anyway, that's the whole idea of distributed energy. And with that, we can save a tremendous amount. We can get rid of coal, petroleum for generation of electricity directly, and petroleum for automobiles and trucks, clean up the atmosphere, stop this rage about climate change, and that's the thing too. But understand something, and this is a very important point. Ask the question, if we stop using fossil fuels, which is a misnomer in the first place, they're not made from fossils. That's the oil comes from comets that pass by Earth. That's where the oil comes from. But anyway, be that as it may, the use of petroleum-based fuels, get rid of that, get rid of nuclear, coal, and those are the big ones. Get rid of those and stop geothermal. Geothermal is a terrible, terrible idea. It's very likely that that's what caused the recent volcano eruption in Hawaii. And also there's issues with it being used in Arizona and other places. Stop using geothermal, except at the surface. Geothermal is great, and it should be used if you have it like tubes under your house, where it is used directly. But drilling these deep holes down into the magma and pumping water down in there is total insanity. But geothermal should be used all over the place and for heating and cooling houses. That's something that should be implemented as a national plan over the next 10 years. That would save a lot of energy just for heating houses. A tremendous amount of energy is lost in the cold months of the year, the fall, winter, and spring, in the northern hemisphere, in the United States mainly. And this goes all the way down to Texas, where they're heating with fuel of natural gas or fuel oil or even wood, where, you know, you're cutting down basically trees to fuel wood stoves, make pellets, etc. But at any rate, cut down on the use of those, what I call high energy content fuels, replace it with wind and also natural gas, then to top it off, just that last 5% with natural gas. That's the plan. And there will be enough energy there for the electric car of the future being powered from the wind. And wind is a renewable energy source. If you use some wind energy today, that does not take away from the wind energy that's going to be here tomorrow, because it's driven by solar energy. It's driven by solar energy, electrical energy, as the Earth discharges the solar capacitor. So this is an immense amount of energy that's driving the winds. As I've said before, I stopped doing the Tesla back in the early 2000s. I was working on a Tesla project to reproduce what Tesla was doing to extract energy from the atmosphere. And I stopped that. I said, no, this is not a good method, because you're going to be killing birds. You have this tremendous amount of energy coming down from the ionosphere to distinct locations. It's just a dangerous technology. If there's a sudden solar flare, all of a sudden you got to shut everything down. It's a mess. It would not be a good technology to be used on a wide scale. Tesla had problems with it. He blew out a big generator plant in Colorado Springs one night. He was running running the electricity through the ground. That's the way he was delivering it. And it got out of control, and he blew out a generator plant in nearby Colorado Springs, which he had to pay for. And so atmospheric electricity is really, it's like riding a bucking bronco, so to speak, that never gets, what do they call it? When the bucking bronco stops bucking, it's like he's broken. Well, you never can break the atmospheric electricity. It's always going to be wild and woolly, like the old Wild West. And so Tesla technology for deriving energy from the ionosphere, like I was going to do, is a bad idea. That's when I turned to energy from the wind and realized that wind is the true source of energy that we should be looking into. Okay, I'm going to switch gears now. And I'm going to talk about this document that's very important. And I'm going to read some passages here. Let me pull this up. Where is this? Here it is. And this is called, by the way, and there's a whole history to this. I'm not going to go into all of the history, but this was written. It's a top secret document from the early 1950s, the Cold War era. It is called Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. It's a programming manual. Operations Research Technical Manual, TW5. Let me see if I can expand this a little bit. 5W7905.1. I'm not going to go into the whole history of this, but it's about social engineering and how the elite have decided that they should get all the good stuff and you're basically stupid and you should be kept stupid. I'm going to read this because this has been the plan since the 1950s. I'm going to just read some lines out of this. It's a outline. This is predates the UN Agenda 2020. It predates the UN Agenda 2030, etc. But listen to some of these lines from this document. It's a 29-page. When I got it, it's more like, about 60 pages total. But this is the plan that the elite decided on after World War II, and they were implementing it. The solution of today's problems requires an approach which is ruthlessly candid, with no agonizing over religious, moral, or cultural values. In other words, in spite of any religious, cultural, social values, they're going to implement this. And then look at this. This is talking to the people who were allowed to see this top secret document. You have qualified for this project because of your ability to look at human society with cold objectivity and yet analyze and discuss your observations and conclusions with others of similar intellectual capacity without a loss of discretion or humility. In other words, they're looking at themselves as being more intelligent than you. Wow. And so anyway, it says, silent weapon technologies has evolved from operations research, a strategic and tactical methodology developed under the military management in England during World War II. Okay, then it says, it was soon recognized by those in positions of power that the same methods might be useful for totally controlling a society, but better tools were necessary. Then they talk about social engineering. They talk about the use of computers and higher speed computers and how the Rockefeller Foundation got in on the ground floor to fund this operation. Then listen to this. Now, I've been talking about energy. The very first thing it talks about is energy. It says, just a second, I have to pull this up here. Energy is recognized as the key to all activity on Earth. There it says here, a quiet war was quietly declared by the international elite at a meeting held in 1954. This volume marks the 25th anniversary of the beginning of the Quiet War. So it had started 25 years earlier. Already this domestic war has had many victories on many fronts throughout the world. Okay, now listen to this one. I'm just reading bits and pieces out of this document. Consequently, in the interest of future world order, peace, and tranquility, it was decided to privately wage a quiet war against the American public with an ultimate objective of permanently shifting the natural and social energy wealth of the undisciplined and irresponsible many into the hands of the self-disciplined, responsible, and worthy few. Listen to this. Listen to what they're saying. They're calling you undisciplined, irresponsible, and they're calling themselves self-disciplined, responsible, and the worthy few. They are worthy. And so you find people like the Clintons. They believe this. The Obamas. They believe that they are better. And so they have this double talk when they talk to the bankers or their immediate superiors in this world structure. They have one lingo that they give out. And then when they talk to you, the public, it's something totally different. Now listen to this. The quality of education given to the lower class, that's you. They're talking about you out there. The lower class, you are the lower class, they're saying. Listen to this. The quality of education given to the lower class must be of the poorest sort, so that the most... Just a second, I have to pull this up again here. That the ignorance isolating the inferior class from the superior class is and remains incomprehensible to the inferior class. In other words, they're going to keep you stupid without you knowing it. That's what they're saying. This is a document that outlined what they want to do, the elite with the... Listen to this. I'm going to keep reading from this. With such an initial handicap, even bright lower class individuals have little, if any, hope of extricating themselves from their assigned lot in life. This form of slavery is essential to maintaining some measure of social order, peace, and tranquility for the upper ruling class. Oh, okay, I'm going to keep reading here. This is a document designed to... The public might instinctively feel that something is wrong, but because of the technical nature of the silent weapon, they cannot express their feeling in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help and do not know how to associate with others to defend themselves against it. The silent weapon is applied gradually to the public, so the public adjusts and adapts to its precedent and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their lives, allocates opportunities, destroys opportunities, controls the economic environment, the availability of raw materials, capital, bank rates, inflation of the currency, the possession of property, industrial capacity, manufacturing, the availability of goods, the prices of commodities, services, the labor force, payments to government officials, the legal functions, personal data files uncorrectional by the party slandered. In other words, they're going to put out information to slander you, and there's no way you can find out who's doing it. They do this to me all the time. Advertising, media content. Okay, I'm going to go on here. Now listen to this. This is about education. This is what they want to do. Disengaging their minds, sabotaging their mental activities by providing low-quality program of public education in mathematics, logic, systems design, and economics, and by discouraging technical creativity. This is a document created in the 1950s and being implemented. This is what Common Core education, this is public education, that's what it's all about. So get your kids out of these schools. This is why I developed my education program. It's on my webpage, teaching people how to think, logic, and how they're throwing bad science at you. Once again, my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.